Good evening.
Good evening.
I hope you're well.
Hi, I am. Thank you. You too?
Good.
You sound good.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we start, even though it's just you?
Okay.
Or do you want to wait?
Well, it's up to you. No one else seems to be saying anything.
No, I know. So, I don't know if you listened to the Tikkuni Zohar last night on the recording.
No, I wasn't able to. We were gone most of the day today.
I hope everything's well.
Yes, it's just that he was seeing a second doctor, you know, for a second opinion, which sounds good. They just say it's a wait. It takes time. It's up to 3 months, and then tomorrow he's going to have an MRI just to make sure, you know, the doctor wants to make sure there's not a physical something else going on. So,
understand. Anyway, I last night, between the two sections, I gave a little halakha, which I think you should listen to.
Okay.
And hopefully people will hear it and start to ask questions, but we'll see. So let's start.
Okay.
L'shem yichud kudsha barichu ishkinte bit hilur himu ud hilur hilur himu. L'yakdash l'shem yudhe bavavhe b'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asok Torah mitzvah. V'ayhino amadunam Elohinu aleinu ma'asei yadenu kudanei aleinu ma'asei yadenu kudaneihu. Tachatzei ka'adchav. Adam Mashich Aleya Heila Mesava Vesaiv Leya Ulkol Bene Alma Vahiru Ivya Vishadihu Mesaiv Vesaiv Alma Detaninam Kadapek nishmatin mi b'nei nasha ishtar mineya gufa b'smesav b'saiv beita b'saiv l'kol inun dim karvin beya Adahu diktiv hanogea mebet v'gomer. Come and see. When Adam sinned, he drew upon himself the force of defilement, and he defiled himself and all the people in the world. This is the evil serpent who is unclean and defiled the world. As we have learned, when the angel of death removes the soul of a person, what is left is an unclean body that defiles the house and all those who approach it. Hence, he then touches the dead body, because death comes from the defiled evil serpent. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, when we know when life is gone, that that's the preciousness of the soul, and it leaves the defiled body. And of course, that's why we look forward to Kukat and the ashes of the red heifer.
Amen. But here's an interesting question. When someone dies, their neshama level of soul leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their ruach leaves and goes another place, to some other location. But the nefesh doesn't leave according to the reincarnation rules. The nefesh doesn't leave until the body has fully decayed. So if the body is going to become impure because the nefesh and because the neshama and the ruach have left, what does that say about the nefesh?
It's still there.
It's still there, but the body is defiled. Is the nefesh becoming defiled? I've never seen anything in the books on reincarnation what I'm asking. So we're not going to get an answer here, but it's just something to contemplate. Verse 320.
You know who you remind me of is Dendell Jones. Years ago, he used to provoke my thinking of things I never thought of. You know, I think sometimes we read Torah and we read Zohar and we pass over the words and we think we got it because of the memory, I guess, of what we have. And then you say something that's a provoker that lets you say, never thought of that. Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
I know.
Welcome.
I have a question. If the nefesh is left and the body is, becoming unclean and defiled, well, what happens to all of that correction that the nefesh did? Is it undone? And does he get, when they have the beating in the grave, does he experience all that?
Well, the answer to that question is, if you think about it, the nefesh that is left in the body really isn't connected to that person's ruach or that person's neshama. That nefesh is the ger, right? Because it's not the first reincarnation. For the most part, there's very few people who are totally new souls where they have the opportunity to correct all three levels in this incarnation. So the ruach or the neshama has been connected to a nefesh that's a ger, which is why really the answer to the question I posed, just as you asked the question you asked, I came to understand it, because the ger is pure, but it's not as pure as the ruach or the neshama, and so it's on a level where it can become impure. But all of the corrections are completed if the nefesh is completed. If the nefesh is not completed, then the corrections on a nefesh is something similar to the spelling, in my estimation, to the way the autocorrect works on your smartphone. Where it's an automatic correction and it really led that nefesh has now elevated to that level where the correction has imprinted itself on the nefesh. So it won't be lost, because the impurity can't really change holiness. It just covers it. So I hope that's clear.
I thought the nefesh had to do with the blood, that was what made us human, that was an animal soul. And while Brandy was asking her question, it made me wonder, when the blood was wherever it goes, did that have some effect with the nefesh, either leaving or being reincarnated or whatever? you know, that had to do with what you said.
Well, if it is a nephesh that is a ger, the way that the reincarnation works is when the body fully decays, that nephesh, which is complete, the ger nephesh is complete, or it wouldn't come with the ruach or the neshama. So that gear goes and connects back with the ruach if it's going to reincarnate, if the ruach wasn't complete. But if the ruach is complete, then that gear is available for someone else to attach itself.
So is that what we as converts do? We just go from soul to soul that needs us, or body to body that needs us?
No, that's not my understanding.
Okay.
Because the word for the ger in the reincarnation sense is not the same as the reincarnation, the word for ger in
As a convert,
somebody who wasn't born Jewish, who's now chosen to become Jewish. It's two different meanings. That's my perception.
Okay, about Brandy's comment about the beating of the grave, isn't the antidote for the beating of the grave what we do with the beating of the willows on Hoshana Rabbah? So you don't have to be, I don't want to use the word fearful, but anxious or fearful, whatever, about the beating of the grave.
The beating in the grave, it's like the same idea. If you study Torah, you can't go to Gehenna. If you study Torah, your soul is going to choose to leave the body on its own. The only purpose of the beating in the grave is because the soul doesn't want to leave that body. It's so connected to physicality that it wants to continue to wear the body as a garment.
Mm-hmm.
But as you study Torah, you separate from those desires. And so the soul, all levels of the soul are going to leave and choose to leave the body, you know, as soon as possible, so to speak. And so it won't stay in that level.
I've always had the sense that all these Bible characters that I've come to love through Torah study, that they're going to show up.
Yeah,
and especially, what did you say?
I said they are. They're all going to resurrect.
No, but I mean show up. If I have to pass in this generation or whatever, you know, I've always felt like, because in the very beginning when the rabbi, this was in '86, was giving the students, this was my first time to go to a synagogue, was giving Hebrew names to the students in the class, and when he looked up Barbara, he was ready to give me Hagar. Well, because I already knew lots of meanings of words, because that was my first exposure to Torah, was looking up names and words in a concordance. And I said, I don't want that name. And he said, why not? And I said, because it means devastation. And he didn't crack a smile or anything, and he said, what's your middle name? And I said, Jean. So he gave me the name of Hannah. Okay. But then I always felt bad that when I'd leave the earthly plane, that I was going to have to face Hagar and say, I didn't want your name. And then I found out in studying that she's became known as Keturah, which meant incense offering, which she became a believer and a worshiper of Hashem. And after that, it was like the more I studied the Torah, and especially the women and the characters, you know, I always felt like, oh, well, I'm not just waiting for my mother and daddy and all my family. I'm waiting for all of them to show up. So I don't want to think about the beating of the grave or lingering, you know, just, I'd like to think of this a bit and just be taken up.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. It's just, you know, if you become righteous, then you'll just be taken up. That's the goal.
That's just what I look forward to. So to me, that's certainty. Anyway.
Chanoch, can I just make a comment on what Hannah said? I was a couple years ago. I was at second meal at the Kabbalah Center on Shabbat, and one of the teachers there introduced me to Moses, and it kind of made me think of what you just said. It's funny how you do meet these people in this lifetime.
Well, I'm going to question you on that. When you say you introduced me to Moses, what were you experiencing? Were you able to see him physically, or was it it was somebody that he introduced you to as Moshe, having the same name?
Yes, the latter.
Okay.
A Moses.
Yes, I understand.
Yes, I'm sorry. But that's what I was saying. They come into your life, those names of people, you know, related at different times, and it does happen in your life.
Yes, but I have never met another Keturah.
Me either. But I felt like when I see her, she'll tell me, I didn't like it either. She didn't like the name Hagar either. So I don't have to feel, oh, I'm going to feel bad when I see her in heaven. I didn't like her name. But she can say, well, I didn't like it either. And it got changed, you know.
Keturah has the meaning of getting drawn close.
Yes, intimate.
So, you know, and what it's saying is the person known as Hagar no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
The corrections that soul made at the nefesh mm-hmm. level was transferred to the nefesh of Keturah, and the name was changed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what happens in a name change.
Mm-hmm.
So let's read verse 320.
Okay.
We're not going to finish today, like I thought, but that's good. A good conversation. We're still having. We all da ke wandihu na tel nishmata v'saev gufa kedain itev reshu lekol. Inun sitre misavan lesharia alo. Dehahu gufa istav misitra dehahu. Hivya bisha desharia alo. Vialda bekol atar dehahu hivya. Bisha share. Misav leya feistav. For this reason, when the angel of death was taken, the soul, and when the angel of death has taken the soul and has defiled the body, permission is granted for all sorts of defilement to settle on that body. The body has been defiled by the side of the evil serpent that has taken possession of it, because death comes from it. Hence, wherever that evil serpent dwells is made unclean. questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, this is probably a low-level question. Is this Satan, the angel of death?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about people who work in a funeral home? I'm thinking of my aunt that passed away a year ago. She was so sick at the, you know, last few days, you know, 2 days, I guess, and just, she just looked so bad. And the cosmetician that, I guess that's what she's called, who tended to her body, you know, did her hair, and I mean, she just looked beautiful, and you know, that was such a, that's such a mitzvah. You know, we don't have a burial society here, but have a kedusha, but you know, and I know that, and she was very, very caring, and you know, just a wonderful person in interacting with myself, with me. And you know, I think of, I've often thought about the persons who work in, I mean, that's their vocation, their livelihood, their job, and here they're around all this defilement. But is the mitzvah that they do for the dead who can't repay them, does that, I don't think, cover up the defilement, but does it merit something for them?
It does merit something for them, yes. It's a mitzvah that they're doing. It's a good deed that they're doing, and they will get the reward in the world that is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cover up the defilement, the fact that they're touching a dead body, and so they minimize it. Mm-hmm. As you said, we don't have a chevra kedisha, but there's, I've been waiting, but I'm not sure I will get it, because there was a woman who moved into this building here who had been the head of the Hever Kedisha in her synagogue in Alabama. And so she had written out the laws for the people that were replacing her, not the laws, but the procedures. And I'd asked her to have them send a copy so that people would be able to know the procedure and be able to do it. And there's another woman who lives here that her grandfather in North Carolina had taught her how to prepare his body because there wasn't a chevra kedusha. And so she, when her daughter got to be 30 years old, she made sure her daughter knows how to prepare her body. So
mm-hmm.
it's something that I think is important. But there's a two sides of it. Is, you know, if you're looking for that and you ask these questions to your rabbi or to another rabbi, the question becomes one of, you know, are you giving up the certainty that I'm going to live 300 plus years? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't have an answer to that question. But I would suggest, maybe I'll do it, do one of the Jewish question and answer websites and see how they respond to the procedures for and the prayers that are said when the washing of the body is done and how it's done.
Mm-hmm. A long time ago, I read an article of someone, the experience with the procedure, and I think it was on Chabad. You know how there's, well, and even in our Jewish cemetery, there's not a faucet at the entrance of the graveyard. So we bring a bottle of water and paper towels with us. And if by chance we've, I think once or twice we've stopped at the graveyard, you know, not knowing that we were going to do it and did it. And so washed our hands with the hose before coming into the house. And then always come in and read Numbers 19, you know, the verses about the ashes of the red heifer. And that's kind of what I taught my students. No one has ever really told me, I mean, yes, about the hand washing, but not about reading the Torah portion. And was that okay to teach that one?
Yes, it is okay to teach it. One of Rabbi Ashlag's teachings is if you're not sure what is the halakha on a subject, look around to see what the community is doing. Because that really is the halakha. People know what to do it, what to do and how to do it intuitively.
Mm-hmm. Well, I felt like, you know, we're told if we study the offerings, it's as if we brought an offering. So I felt like, well, if we read the ashes of the red heifer, then it's as if we had
cleansed yourself.
The ashes and the rest of the water, you know. So
yes.
That also kind of helps your emunah with moving towards certainty that we actually have that.
Correct.
Ashes of the red heifer, if you know what I mean, on the spirit, in the spiritual dimension, in our consciousness, I should say.
I do. I do know what you mean, and then I agree with you.
Okay.
We're out of time, and there's still three more verses, so we'll do those on Monday.
Okay. All right. Thank you again,
everyone,
and I'm glad the other two responded.
Well, maybe they listened last night. You have everyone should have a good evening, and at the 7 o'clock class will be questions and answers, so I hope you'll bring some.
Okay.
Shalom.
All right.
Shalom to all.
Shalom. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.